Hello and welcome on this very beautiful summer morning to my little dream country here in the city of Tampere or on its outskirts. I'm at the shore of the lake where I came to row for the last several summers. There was a tinge of melancholy to my coming here this time because when it was still winter, I learned from the company that was providing the rowboat service that they were discontinuing that, so it's no longer possible for me, at least for now, at least this summer, to go rowing and do the episodes on the lake that I like to do for the past three summers. But the lake is still here, the water is still here, and the place is still here. Having said that, there's another theme that I wanted to touch on, and I got an illustration of that as I came here. I wish I hadn't gotten that illustration because it's not a development for the better. The bridge, the wooden bridge that you see on the front cover of my book of short stories called At Dawn, Early Short Stories, and of which I took some photos with myself in those photos just earlier this summer, that bridge is now no longer quite itself. It's still there, but two pieces of paper covered with plastic have been added right to the middle of it, and one of them says, "Do not jump from this bridge into the water." The other says, "Unauthorized access into the area forbidden." I wondered what that latter sign means, because this is an area open to everyone. It's a public area. And so I could only guess that maybe it means the little lagoon from which I used to start my boating trips when that was still possible. The boats are no longer here, of course, now. These signs are on plain white paper in a very plain font. I just can't help thinking, couldn't we think in this modern world in more aesthetic terms? If there need to be these signs, which seem to me silly anyway, it's not going to stop anyone from jumping from that bridge if they're going to want to do it in the first place. That would be stupid, however, because there are rocks right underneath the surface, so the person would get hurt, and maybe something like that has happened, maybe that prompted that sign. The other one is also hard to understand. Who initiated that sign? Was it the people who live here, maybe? And this is just a completely wild theory, but I can't think of anyone else who would, on the other side of the town, think to themselves, "Hey, there's that little wooden bridge, and then there's that little lagoon. Shouldn't we make sure that there's a sign that nobody should come into that lagoon without permission or authorization?" So I would have to think that maybe it's the people who come to swim here from these very nearby buildings. This was specifically about the theme of windows of opportunity, because this is something I've been aware of over the years and have become more aware of, that for most things in life there are windows of opportunity that remain open for some time and then close, and after that something is no longer possible that was for that time that the window existed. So in this case, the illustration provided by circumstances here was that if I hadn't come to this lakeside and that bridge earlier this summer, before those signs were attached to the bridge, then that window of opportunity to take photos of myself on that bridge would have closed already. I value one photo in particular. I did take several photos, but one in particular of them is the one I'm talking about. Sometimes, of course, another window of opportunity opens for some same thing. So of course it's not true that everything has only one window of opportunity. Sometimes there are several, but with many other things there is just that single one. And I could think of many examples of that, including several of my creative works, which I can see very clearly needed to be done at those exact times. I even remember being aware of this when I decided that I have to do it now, or it might very well never happen. I've often talked, of course, especially earlier on, about how this was never intended as the kind of podcast that would try to attract a large audience in ways that many podcasts I've heard bits and pieces of try to do. I decided not to even go in that direction at all. In fact, I decided to go completely the other way, because I didn't want to create expectations that I would then be always unhappy about. I didn't want to turn myself into a song and dance person who would in fact not really be enjoying doing the song and dance. So I wanted to do only the things that I have a need for here, and that I also believe some others out there could appreciate and get something out of. Something I've discovered as I leaf through the volumes of the podcast transcript series of books is that I do enjoy the experience of reading these episodes as well. And I don't mean because it's me. In fact, I'm more critical of myself than I would be if they were the words of someone else. But I find that it does make for a nice experience also on paper. And my decision is satisfactory to myself. I'm satisfied by it, by the results also. When I decided early on to really just transcribe the episodes and do no editing afterwards, by that I mean no alterations. Of course, the books are edited in the sense of carefully checked for typos and things like that. I spend a lot of time thinking about where to put the paragraph breaks and so on. But they are faithful transcripts. And that's my favorite type of interview or discussion also, to read on paper these days especially. I've developed a preference for that, because in the past especially it used to be the case that often interviews were highly edited pieces of text that had typically more words from the person writing that article or interview article than from the person being interviewed. And they would often be these very boring recitations of facts that this guy was born here and went to school there, wrote this and this, and then got published there, and then got involved in movies there, and then he moved town and got a dog. And this can all be interesting things if presented interestingly, but it became very boring for me as someone who has read thousands of interviews in my life, it must be thousands, to always experience that format. And also to know that the words of the person being interviewed had been edited highly. And so it didn't represent what was actually said at the time. So I decided to do what I prefer to see, which is to simply write down what I said in each episode. I haven't wanted to make any kind of great proclamation about what I hope this podcast will be. I have ideas about it, but I also believe in some humility, and still maybe I can just say that I have hoped that it could serve as a journal of daily thoughts, sometimes things that occur to me on that particular day or night, and also as a place to reflect on various things that I'm doing or that others have done or are doing, and to be also like, I was talking of it being like a journal. It can be both a professional journal but also a private journal, and there's some measure of autobiography about this also, since I like to sometimes record facts and experiences I've had, but I've wanted to be careful with that because I don't want this to be too much only about myself. I mainly like to relate what I'm talking about to other people and other people's creations. There's a goose stepping close to me. I hope that didn't sound wrong. There is a goose stepping past me. I believe these geese have become so used to me. Maybe some even remember me from earlier years. They aren't too worried about me being around. It's also true with the podcast that I have wisely taken advantage of various windows of opportunities to say certain things when those things were actively on my mind. For example, I was just editing yesterday and the day before and will continue today, the second to the last episode of season 4. In that I talked about a new feeling of freedom that had entered some pieces of music were letting me hear a new type of freedom that I believe didn't exist anywhere in music before that point. And these pieces were from the early 1960s. Where I had arrived on my journey through the history of music. And I mentioned a few particular pieces of music, specifically by bands called The Scorpions and The Ventures. Not all their music has this quality, but those three pieces that I discussed in that episode do have that element. They, as I say there, make my mind go places. What I didn't really get to, I think, unless I've forgotten, I'll see as I continue transcribing, but I can add this in a footnote maybe. I continue to think about that matter later, what would have led to that new feeling of freedom emerging in some types of music in particular, and specifically in certain pieces, not all pieces by those bands, for example. In fact, I find it in very few, very particular ones, but those are incredibly valuable to me, at least, because they are so inspiring. As I continue to think about this, I realized that naturally it probably had a lot to do with speed. I mean, being able to go fast using personal transportation, such as cars and, of course, motorcycles. I've often meant to bring up this topic of speed and how recent this freedom is, because this type of freedom is indeed a 20th century invention. Not invention, that's the wrong word. I mean, it's something that emerged in the 20th century, after the halfway point in particular. By that time, of course, rock music was coming along, seeking to express new feelings of freedom. Motorcycles were getting more popular. You could just jump on a machine and go away and go fast or go to another place. The enjoyment of riding a motorcycle or driving a car could be exhilarating. And that was a freedom that people didn't used to have. I can't stress how huge that fact is. I don't need to explain it more because everyone can understand when just thinking about this matter. In the 19th century, people could go somewhat fast on a train, or in centuries past also already with a horse, but I don't think that it's the same thing. Riding a horse fast, that's not like sitting comfortably on a motorcycle, for example, or in your car and, you know, going at a great speed, just enjoying your life, just sitting there. That's completely different than on the back of a horse. This is probably not any kind of great revelation that I'm talking about here, but it is interesting to see and experience myself how that entered music. So I was glad that I took that window of opportunity when recording that episode and expressed those particular thoughts, because if I hadn't done it just then, the moment would have passed and I at least wouldn't have used those examples, which I feel are good examples, and I wouldn't have said it when I had that realization fresh on my thoughts. So, another window of opportunity. Okay, here is the update about my creative works. As I've discussed in earlier episodes, I have been engaged for some time on my backlog, that is, getting out into the world in a finished form all the things that I have had in progress. Many of them are very near to being finished, needing only some steps, but because there have been so many of them, that's why it's taking such a long time. And as an example of this, I can mention what I've done so far this year. A goal I set for myself for this year would be to try and publish or release one full work per month, because there have been so many so near completion or just waiting for the final stages of editing and then putting the work out there. I have managed to keep to that. So far, in the 7 full months of this year, from January to July, I've published and released the following things. The season 3 book of this podcast transcript series, What Now with Seymour. It's the one that includes the discussions with David Lee Holm and Pierre Estève. 2 chapters and episodes with David and 4 with Pierre. Then I published something that is very near and dear to my heart, namely a large print edition of my book of poetry called Land of Youth and Beauty, Early Poems. That's 2 books. And then in 1 month, the singles called That Dark, Dark Night and In the Fog, Deep. Also on the music front, I released an album called Passages, Dark and Light 2. My very first music album was Passages, Dark and Light, and this is Passages, Dark and Light 2. That's 5 works, and just now, very recently before I came to record this episode here, I finally, to my great happiness, finished and published the sheet music for my set of 12 piano duets called Tales from the North, Book 1. So that is now out there, and as I've said in a few places, the real world premiere of any of these pieces or the full set will happen only when these are performed or recorded by living pianists. The album I did myself some time ago is an intentionally crude and intentionally mechanical demonstration album. In hindsight, I wondered whether it might have been better to label it that. Number 7 of my creative work so far this year, as I record this. Also very special to me, the large print edition of At Dawn, Early Short Stories. I wanted both my book of short stories and book of poetry in this form, which makes them accessible to people whose visual impairment may prevent them from reading many books in this world, if not even most books. This became a dear project to me when I decided to do this. The book of poetry uses an 18-point font that was the largest possible for the largest format that Amazon allows for self-published books. And that was because the line endings needed to be preserved. But because that issue didn't exist with the book of short stories, I was able to use an even larger font, 24-point. That means that it's accessible to even more people whose visual impairment is even greater. Or, I should add, people who may simply want to read a larger font. When I was much younger, I got several different copies of Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass, which he published many editions of in his lifetime, and I've read the earliest one, the last one several times. But the relevance now is that one of the editions I decided to get back then was a large print edition. I have to say that I enjoyed that experience much more than reading any of the volumes with smaller text. I think my inspiration to do the large print editions goes all the way back to that, when I was in my teens or early adulthood. I can also mention that I was inspired to read Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass by it being featured and discussed by Chris Stevens in the TV series Northern Exposure, which I have mentioned many times. It was, of course, certainly worth it, and I'm glad for the experience, and also what it added now to my own creative output, in ultimately leading to me wanting to do these large print editions. I hope that many people who can't read books anymore may find one or both of these books and enjoy the experience. I find that there are certain things that happen only with physical books. I also read ebooks and magazines in digital form a lot, and all of these different ways of reading have their pluses and minuses. Ebooks are handy in many cases, and also a perfectly great choice for reading, but I've recently started again incorporating more reading from physical books into my own life, because I have missed it, and I remembered that there are certain things that happen. Just speaking for myself, I noticed that certain parts of my mind quieten down, go calmer, when I'm reading from a physical book and handling it and being able to turn it around and slap it shut, open it at random, even smell it, of course. Those tactile and sensual elements are something that doesn't happen with digital reading. Just very recently, David Lynch, my greatest creative inspiration of all, tweeted that he has emphysema from his years of smoking, which he also mentions he really loved. I can understand that. I have never been a smoker. As a kid, when somebody offered me a cigarette, I tried it and became nauseous. I'm very glad I had that reaction to it, because it meant there was no temptation for me to start smoking. But clearly for David Lynch, it had been a huge part of his life, as he discusses in various places, including this tweet briefly. And we can't say that his creations would have been the same if he hadn't been a smoker. Anything that is really important and cherished and enjoyed in someone's life contributes to what they do. So we can't take that out of the equation. And really, as the saying goes, your body, your choice. And the most important things that Mr. Lynch mentions in the tweet are that he is otherwise in great health, that he is filled with happiness, and he will never retire. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.